This is a replay of the Tuesday night, July 23rd WGN show. We started right at 10. If you don't hear yourself on it, it's because you didn't call. I hope you'll rectify that soon. We're live Monday through Thursday evenings unless sports preempt us. That's from 10 to 1 Central. Dial 888-876-5593. My toll-free number from OneVoip. For the world's best customer service, it's OneVoip. Check them out at the number 1-VOIP.com. You'll be really glad you did.
Direct from the edge of the lunatic fringe. It's the Raleigh James Show.
I'm Raleigh James, I was about to say, and then there were three, but it turned out, no, four. Now they say deaths come in threes. Well, tonight they come in fours. And added to the list of Jerry Fuller and Sandy Posey and the Four Tops is John Mayall. Yeah. Well, life well lived, though, and older than a lot of people thought. He was 90, so born in 1933 and died yesterday in California. And so, of course, thought by a lot of people to be a lot younger because he was so prolific in the latter 60s, especially with early progressive rock and that kind of stuff. And, yeah, John Mayall Blues Band and all that kind of stuff. So, all right, yeah, well, we'll get something done by him as well and your requests and whatever else is on your mind. But I love this. Eduardo says, good news on job search 2024. So, Eduardo, what do you know?
Yeah, good evening, Raleigh. Yeah, so Publix at West Shore. It's right across the mall on Kennedy and West Shore.
Okay.
So today I they swapped me, and I was doing some,
What do you mean?
They were making copies.
What do you mean? They
well, they do a swab. I think it's a saliva test. They're checking.
And what are they finding out?
Yeah, well, this is kind of like the prerequisites they do before, you know, you actually start.
Yeah, but it makes me wonder, do they get your DNA, too?
Yeah. Well, it's...
Who knows?
Some things they do before, yeah. I mean, they did ask me for my shirt size, so that's that was nice. But so Friday, I'm going to do I'm going to sit down and watch a video where they tell you about the history of Publix, and then they'll show me around the store, and so it's...
Yeah. All right, well, good. I know about where that is, not far from the water and not far from the causeway, so, yeah, not far from 275.
Yeah, right, it's near the street where the road where you would take to get the Clearwater, yeah, it's right there.
Yeah, exactly, yes, the infamous bridge.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. So, indeed. All right.
Yeah, so we'll see. I mean, I'll kind of like talk about this. I don't think we need to talk about it right now, but if this hospital thing happens later on, maybe we can improvise on maybe even doing both of them, you know?
Yeah. Well,
you can never make too much money anyway.
You're right, but there's still only 24 hours in a day. So you're going to learn the whole history of George Jenkins.
Yeah. See, that should be fun. Yeah,
I know all about that. So he's actually in Georgia originally, and he joined the Florida real estate boom, and it was interesting because when he came to Florida, he was dropped off in the middle of Ybor City, and. And he had $9 in his pocket and nothing else. So I bet you the film will talk about that.
They dropped him and the chickens over there that our mom likes to go over there and check out.
Yeah.
When I take mom in the car, she likes to check out the animal species, like the peacocks that are near her house.
Okay.
Yeah. That's funny. Yeah. I was going to get into... before I drop off on a couple of stories here, one of them was the miracle rescue on sea over there at Newfoundland. Seven fishermen were at a life raft.
Uh-huh. Yep.
And they managed to stay
48 hours
alive for 3 days.
Yeah, 48 hours is what I understood.
Yeah.
And, live to tell the tale. And, those waters, firstly, they're not warm. And so stranded 48 hours in a life raft. And so I guess the entire boat had disappeared off Newfoundland, the Elite Navigator. And it was missing. Apparently it caught fire. And so the crew did the only thing they could do at that point was abandon the boat. And all they had was that life raft that drifted out into the Atlantic.
Right.
And, that was all the news for a couple days, including aircraft and helicopters and ships and all of that. And they were rescued absolutely last Friday, I think. And what's interesting is people don't realize how dangerous fishing can be. It's one of the most deadly professions in Canada. And it was a flare that saved them. They spotted the flare. So,
well, that helps to have that, yeah.
Yes, it sure does. It absolutely does. And I assume that life raft was prepared. But what was interesting is that before they jumped ship, they sent out distress calls, and none of which were answered. Now, the reality is the fire had broken out by them, so it's possible that the distress calls never got out. But the bottom line is originally they were hoping that a distress call would rescue them. And, the interesting thing that I found, because they interviewed the guys and all that, was that one of them didn't know how to swim. Now, I don't know about you, but if I'm going to take a job on a fishing vessel, I am going to know how to swim.
Right.
So, guy said...
That's a good idea, yeah.
Yeah, he said, I was relieved to make it to the raft. I couldn't swim a stroke to save my life. I thought, who the heck takes that job? So, all's well that ends well, but I hope to hell he's going to get some swimming lessons.
Yeah. Speaking of requiting to take a job, just one more story. I'm doing like a mini James here.
Uh-huh.
This New York Times restaurant critic, Pete Wells, he was surprised to find out that, because he's a food critic, that he has poor cholesterol and hypertension and blood sugar. Well, you are a food critic. You don't forget that.
Well, firstly, I mean, the best food as far as taste and all that kind of stuff usually is heart attack on a plate. So, when he says that he's moving on, I mean, what did he expect?
Right.
And so that was the only part of that. He wrote an op-ed piece or something for the New York Times, and he did the 100 best restaurants in New York City. Well, I guarantee none of them are healthy if they taste good. I mean, it's just that simple. So
that is funny.
Yeah, it is. You know, occasionally I'll have a healthy meal. I can tell you I've never enjoyed one, but... So he's bowing out gracefully because he's surprised he has high cholesterol. Firstly, a lot of that can be genetic. It isn't necessarily even what you eat. But in general, if you have those kind of meals that are just so wonderful, you can't possibly believe they're good for you.
Yeah. I think I could have tried this job, maybe. Maybe, I don't know.
I worked with a guy in the 60s who got a job as a PR guy for some wine company. And this guy had to go to restaurants and promote his wine while he ate dinners. Well, it got to the point where he had to have at least two dinners a night in order to get the volume of the restaurants he was going to. And I remember this so well because he'd take me to some of them. And he, you know, he'd say, well, just don't eat dessert. We'll have that at the next place. You know, I mean, it was just...
Oh, my goodness. Wow.
Yeah, after a while, it just became a job to him. So, yeah.
Oh, my God.
I don't know. And but, you know, and of course he did. He had to figure out how to eat, you know, just have the salads or whatever, you know, at each place so that he wouldn't, you know, be rolling himself home at night. And from what I understand, restaurant critics normally do this. And, you know, very often they take someone with them to finish the plate. Otherwise, what
right. Yeah, they mentioned that in the article. Yeah, because I think you took like three people with them.
Well, you need to. Well, the three people should be eating the deal. And yeah, I've heard heard one restaurant critic had said she took a man with her to every meal. She called Hoover. He just scarfed down the rest of the meal. But good restaurants, you know, great restaurants, the food is very rich, and you know, you can't possibly believe that this stuff is good for you.
No,
so,
especially if you're doing it almost every day.
Well, I also want to know, we're trusting this guy to to review the restaurants and he doesn't really understand what's in the food?
Yeah. Yeah, that's...
Yeah, I know.
Like Dawn Blackner Jackson that John Williams talks to during the day. I like her because she's very... She's like a nutritionist, so she does healthy eating advice.
Well, that basically means don't eat out at the places that are really good, I'm sorry to say. If she's got other information, I'm ready to hear it. But, you know, then again, me and my Mexican Coke, no, I'm not going to stop for a glass of healthy tea or something. Forget about it. So yeah, I can't imagine, though, that I think his reviews are now all suspect if he didn't understand what he was eating.
Yeah. All right, I'm going to drop off. So I'll keep you updated on if there's more details, you know, as the days come.
Oh, I'll look forward to it. Good luck. Enjoy it.
Okay.
And check out George Jenkins.
Okay.
Let me know all about it. Okay, thanks.
Okay.
All right. So there's an heir, actually, to a woman, I think, that she pretty much owns it all, Publix, as far as that. But I think George originally, before he started Publix, worked like for Piggly Wiggly or something. And but Eduardo can tell us. He'll take notes during the film, I'm sure. So, yeah, it's Publix is a Florida institution, though it's in many other states now, too, I understand. But back in the day in South Florida, the competitor was Food Fair. And boy, I'll tell you, people either like Food Fair or they like Publix. And sort of like in L.A., you like Ralph's or you like Vons, you know, that kind of a thing. All right. And of course, you know, everybody's owned by Kroger now, right? Or Safeway, which will soon be Kroger. All right. So 888-876-5593. 8888 Raleigh. So Jerry Fuller. Now, it may not be a household name, although this man did have some records under... I notice I'm not saying big hits, but several records under his own name. I'll play one of them coming up on Challenge, actually. But he was 85, died in Sherman Oaks, and he wrote a couple of songs that got to number one. One was Traveling Man, Ricky Nelson, and the other was Al Wilson's Show and Tell, which he not only wrote, but he produced as well. He was one of the interesting songwriters who was also a producer, but often didn't produce the songs that he wrote. And so that was interesting. Of course, Gary Puckett in The Union Gap, Young Girl, Lady Willpower, Over You. You know, this is all Jerry Fuller stuff and all just really good. You know, for years, I thought he was responsible for Ricky Nelson's sound on Imperial, which some of those records were so terrific. And he actually wasn't. He wrote Traveling Man, which is great, but he did not produce it. And the flip side of it, by the way, was Hello, Mary Lou that Gene Pitney wrote. But the sound of those records, which, you know, that made Ricky Nelson, period, were two people, really. Jimmy Haskell was the producer and Bunny Robin was the engineer. And together, they created a sound that just was really unstoppable and bigger than life. And, you know, I'd contend bigger than Ricky Nelson would have been otherwise. But Jerry Fuller was originally from Fort Worth. And he moved to L.A. when he was about 21 in 1959. And really immediately got a job as a musician. He went on tour with the Champs, didn't everybody. And that's where he got to know Glenn Campbell. And they remained close. And through his demo work, he'd sing demos and do session stuff. Gene Autry's Challenge Records signed him. And he actually had four top 10 hits. And I'm going to play something that wasn't one of them, but of all of them, I think it might be the best representative. But in any event, what was interesting is when he wrote Traveling Man, he didn't write it for Ricky Nelson. He wrote it for Sam Cooke. And because he thought, well, you know, it has that poppy flavor of Only 16 or Wonderful World or Cupid. That'll be just perfect. But I'm not sure if Sam rejected it or if someone interceded on Ricky's behalf. But the next thing you know, it made its way to Ricky Nelson and was quite the hit. As far as songs he didn't write, but he did produce, O.C. Smith's Little Green Apples. That's probably the stunning one of the bunch. And Bobby Russell wrote it. But would it have been as good without Jerry Fuller? Probably not. So that's where we'll leave it. Oh, we might even get to, you know, he did the Knickerbockers. Yeah, talk about a one-hit wonder. Yeah, which a lot of people think that they were British. No, they were New Jersey. But regardless, Bo Charles and Buddy Randall wrote it. But you listen to Lies, and it does have the energy of a Beatles hit. So shows you how dynamic Fuller was and how broad his range was. So whether it was ballads or country or pop or soul, he kind of did it all and continued to for quite a while. And never personally nominated for a Grammy, though some of the records he worked on were, to say the least, and not inducted into either the Songwriters Hall of Fame or the Nashville Songwriters Hall of Fame. And I bet you that will be rectified now. Yeah, too bad he won't be around to see it. So, yeah, we'll play a little Jerry Fuller. Yeah, maybe something on Challenge like Shy Away coming up. But before I get there, you know, here I am just prattling on, and I realize that I need to tell you about the CC Radio 2E. You know, I think Bob Crane should be knighted. He, when he was upset at the state of radio reception years ago, and weren't we all, he said, I could do better. And boy, did he. The thing that every one of his radios have in common is just terrific AM and FM reception, period. Now, what makes the CC2E better? Well, tune your average radio to some weak AM station somewhere. Then try the C. Crane CC Radio 2E right next to it. Oh, you'll hear the difference. If it's over your head, it is on this radio. Probably one of the best AM/FM radios made today. You will hear everything with better clarity and high-quality audio. And you, by the way, can adjust it to make it sound however you want. But bottom line is it's designed to receive long-range AM and FM stations and make weak signals stronger. It's not a magician. It won't bring in things that aren't over your head. But if anybody could get the signal, the CC Radio 2E will do that. It also gets weather and weather alert, which makes it a great emergency radio. And I keep this one by my bedside. John has the 3, but I love that 2E. They're both great radios, really. And you can go to ccradio.com and take a look at it. ccradio.com. In fact, it was that weather alert that notified me just the other day when I otherwise had no idea what was going on, but there it was, loud and clear. So it is a good emergency radio. Now, if you can't go online, you can call them. Great customer service. 800-522-8863. 800-522-TUNE. You can order over the phone, and you'll talk to a real person who knows what they're doing, answering all your questions. And they'll send you a hard copy of the catalog if you want it. But if you can go online, go to ccradio.com, ccradio.com. Look at everything. And by the way, sign up for their newsletter. You'll be the first to know about exclusive offers, and they won't spam you. So that's ccradio.com, the Sea Crane Company. Look at the CC Radio 2E, and you tell them Raleigh sent you on WGN Radio.
Well, I just shy away. My face gets red. I just shy away. I lose my head. There's so many things that I'd like to say, but I always shy away. I saw you were standing by your locker as I went strolling by. Well, I'm not much at flirting and I'm not a talker, but I just had to wink my eye. Then I just shy away, my face gets red, I just shy away. I lose my head. There's so many things that I'd like to say, but I always shy away. Well, I looked at my watch and time was flying too soon. The bell would ring. I had to move fast, but my nerve didn't last, and I just couldn't say a thing, 'cause I just shy away. My face gets red, I just shy away. I lose my head.
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James. Got to number 71, so one of his bigger hits for Jerry Fuller there in 1961. And actually, Dave Burgess from the Champs wrote it, and it came out on Challenge. So rest in peace, Jerry Fuller. Yeah, we'll play something that was more of a hit that you wrote, but I wanted to hear Jerry. And actually, that probably sounds better than most of the stuff he had put out. All right, so we will get back to it and your requests and everything else coming up on WGN Radio.
I'm a traveling man, made a lot of stops all over the world, and in every port I own the heart of at least one lovely girl. I've a pretty señorita waiting for me down in old Mexico, and if you're ever in Alaska, stop and see my cute little Eskimo. Oh, my sweet Fraulein down in Berlin town makes my heart start to yearn, and my China doll down in old Hong Kong waits for my return. Pretty Polynesian baby over the sea, I remember the night when we walked in the sands of Waikiki and I held you oh so tight. Sweet Fraulein down in Berlin town makes my heart start to yearn.
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James. One of the few songs from the early days of Ricky Nelson where he's not double tracked, but there it is. A traveling man. Jerry Fuller wrote it. Like I say, he didn't do the production. That was Jimmy Haskell along with the engineer Buddy Robin, who did all that on the great early Imperial stuff. But he certainly wrote it. And, of course, the flip side, Hello, Mary Lou, Gene Pitney wrote. So rest in peace for Jerry Butler. Yeah, we'll move on over to Sandy Posey. But before we do, let's check out Cindy in Chicago, who says she's got some requests. So what is it you want to hear, Cindy?
Yeah, I'm in a much better mood, and I just want to hear happy songs. You know, I was going to ask for a Four Tops, I'll Be There, but I don't want to hear that.
Well, you're going to hear the Four Tops, Ask the Lonely, because that's my favorite.
Okay, that's fine, but I just don't want to hear I'll Be There.
Well, you're not going to. You're going to hear Ask the Lonely.
But then, anyhow, what I want to hear is that song, I don't know who it's by, I forget. Love Grows Where My Rosemary Grows.
Oh, God, Edison Lighthouse. No, you really don't want... I guess you do, actually. Edison Lighthouse.
Okay, well, if you don't want to play that, that's okay. You could play, like, Dion. You could play that one. The Girl Next Door Wants to Be Like Zsa Zsa Gabor.
Okay, all right.
I like that.
All right, we'll do that.
Okay,
Donna the Prima Donna is the name of that, by
Donna
the way.
Donna the Prima Donna. But then, anyhow... my condo is just so nice. There's only one thing wrong with it. There's one thing wrong with it that I didn't notice when I bought it.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't look out the kitchen window. There's a transformer box like 5 feet.
Don't worry about it.
Yes. You know, and we had a lightning storm. I mean, where I used to live, the transformer box would get hit like once every 10 years.
Just considered entertainment.
Okay.
Right.
But then anyhow, I only paid $1,100 in property taxes this term.
Okay.
And this was just the most blessed thing that ever happened to me moving to this place.
Well, good. I'm glad that you feel that way. That is wonderful. And we'll reward you tonight before the show is over with Donna the Prima Donna.
Sometimes I fall asleep before, you know, I don't hear my request. I fall asleep.
You can always listen to the replays.
Oh, okay. But then anyhow, and I'm just, you know, I organized my bedroom. You know, I just have, like, some more things. So I just have to put the pictures on the wall and the little miniature teapot sets and blow glass stuff in the curio cabinet and organize the pantry. And then we're pretty much done.
Very good. Very good.
Okay.
Well, congratulations. Thanks for calling.
Okay,
I appreciate
God
it.
Bless.
All right. So there you have it. Yes, moving is always interesting. That's why, for the life of me, I don't know why. I've mentioned this before. U-Haul has on their trucks Adventure in Moving, because that is the absolute last thing you want. Who in their right mind wants an adventure in moving? Yeah, Adventure in Delivery. Don't start me. Finally found a couple of the air conditioner units I needed for my transmitter room. And, of course, at the time, they were only available. They were available from a great company and a Chicago company, too, ABT. And so thank you, ABT. I would encourage them to use another shipper, but we'll see how long it takes me to get the units, which have actually been in Phoenix for a week. Yeah, it's a bureaucracy at its finest. So, meanwhile, I languish in hell over that. But nonetheless, ABT came through and they had them. So we thank them tremendously for that. All right. So the price was good, too. But at that point, I was not at all concerned about that. I just wanted them to exist. All right. Not existing anymore on the planet, Sandy Posey. But she had a nice long life, 80 years. And she it's interesting because she was one of those singers singing their heart out. I won't say for women's lib, because God is probably the opposite of it, right? Born a woman and single girl, but she did not write them at all. And Martha Sharp wrote those too. Interestingly, she was around for quite a while. Now, granted, the only real hits were in the earlier 60s here I am talking to you and I've just completely lost my train of thought. My God, must be Biden disease. All right, let's see what we can find. I know that that I was in the middle of knowing this before the show, but I guess I should take notes before I start to talk about any of these people. But yes, yeah, Sandy Posey. Like I say, the mid-60s with Single Girl and Born a Woman were just huge, and she never was able to, kind of reclaim that level of success. But unlike a lot of people, she never stopped. Now, Single Girl and Born a Woman came out on MGM, which is a little interesting, but the most interesting thing is that's where she hooked up with Chips Moman, who wound up being at the start of her career and also being at the end of her career, because she had three records out on MGM, and two of them hit and the third one didn't, and then that was pretty much it. For a while in Nashville, she was singing on those sound-alikes. We've talked about this before. Labels like Promenade or Hit or Tops, and you'd see them in the five and dime stores and be like, six hits for 98 cents, you know, three on each side. And they'd be just recreations. And a lot of people in Nashville, Buzz Kasson used to do a lot of that. Well, Sandy Posey did quite a bit of that too. And, really on the strength of a Single Girl and Born a Woman, she did very well. And after that, eventually that was it for MGM. She wound up on Columbia. And what was fascinating about that is she wound up for a while being produced by Billy Sherrill, and she was part of what they later termed Countrypolitan sound and all of that, but it just didn't hit. You know, and there were several that they put out like half a dozen singles on Columbia or so. And, of course, MGM, meanwhile, continues to re-release Single Girl and Born a Woman. And then she signed on Monument for a moment there. and in the mid-70s. And it looked like she was coming back on the charts. And in fact, she got back together with Chip Smallman, actually, and not on Monument. I think Tommy Cogbill produced that stuff. But then after that, I know Chip certainly did It's Midnight, Do You Know Where Your Baby Is? Maybe we'll play that from 1976. That was on Warner Brothers. So it was somewhat of a checkered career in terms of hits, but not in terms of output. She was continuously singing and recording, and she was originally from Jasper, Alabama, but they moved to West Memphis, Arkansas, which is, you know, just across the river from Memphis, and so she wound up as a session singer. And in addition to that, she was working as a receptionist at a studio, and she was doing a lot of things on the Chip Moments, stuff like for Elvis or for Percy Sledge, or she did backup for Joe Tex and Bobby Goldsboro and Tommy Rowe. So a lot of that. And then she started in the mid-60s releasing things under her own name. And that was, but like I say, Born a Woman was just huge, and that was produced in Nashville, and it sold over a million copies. And so that was, in fact, I think that Posey got a couple of Grammy nominations for that. And then, of course, Single Girl, which was also written by Martha Sharp, like I'd mentioned her earlier, was recorded in 66. And again, it did very well on the charts. And then, yeah, the spell was broken after that. And you had a lot of stuff that Chip Smallman produced some stuff on her. And Joe South produced a remake of Will You Still Love Me Tomorrow and all of that. And then like I say, Billy Sherrill took over. But he didn't do anything with her really either. And the single on Monument didn't do much. And then Warner Brothers, you know, a couple of things. But I think, if anything, maybe they got to the 90s on the charts. So she wound up going back to session work. And in fact, she toured as well. She was a backup singer for Skeeter Davis internationally. And then in 74, she moved to contemporary contemporary Christian music and did some of that too. And for the most part, not much. But like I say, continued to perform and continued to do backup and continued to have a life well worth living. And sadly, died from complications of dementia in suburban Nashville in Lebanon, and that was on the 20th, 80 years old. So rest in peace, Sandy Posey. And yeah, we'll play one of those later things that Chips did for her on Warner Brothers. Maybe It's Midnight. All right, so 888-876-5593, 8888 Raleigh. I look at Glenn, he's a first-time caller, and I see Jack Gale's name, and I get excited. So Glenn, welcome to WGN Radio.
First time caller, long time listener.
Oh, I think I know who you are.
Yes, undoubtedly so.
Yes,
and it's been a very long time.
Too long.
Yeah.
And so, can I out you? Can I out you? Is that okay?
Yes, but you never out me for the thing that I'm most proud of.
Well, the thing I was most happy with was Play It Again, Glenn, on on the Northridge station. So what are you most proud of? Tell me.
I'm most proud of having been the original author of the Jaws screen reader.
All right. I didn't know this.
Oh, I thought you did. Yeah.
No, well, that's
back in 94.
That's why I've never outed you for that. I didn't know. That is really impressive. Now, of course,
yes.
I still prefer the Kason show, but that's all right. That's amazing.
Well, that's okay. I made slightly less money there.
Yeah, like none. Right. So
yes.
That's terrific. I had no idea. And so when was
Oh no, I thought you had known, and then it always seemed weird that you went back to my young
I loved it. So tell me about Jaws. How did this is suddenly this is almost more interesting than Jack Gale. Tell me about this. How did you come to do this?
I came to do it just through a circuitous series of circumstances. Back in the late 80s,
uh-huh,
early 90s, I was working at UCLA doing Unix,
uh-huh,
programming.
Okay.
And Windows was the thing, and DOS was really accessible, and Windows wasn't accessible at all.
Right.
And so I hooked up with Ted Hunter, who had Hunter Joyce, and did some side projects for him. And when my wife Jan and I moved to Ithaca, New York, I started working for Ted and working on Jaws.
I had no
idea. It's been a great 30 years.
No idea, but I knew Ted Hunter, and wasn't he like a motorcycle guy? And then
he was.
And then he
became blind because he was driving the wrong way on a one-way street.
Oh, God.
In Britain.
Well, that's easy to do, to say the least. And I guess Bill Joyce was the angel, the investor in it. That's how
yeah.
Ted Hunter Joyce. All right.
Yeah.
So
God, you know quite a bit.
But I didn't know about you, so I didn't know anything, clearly. So,
well,
I knew about Rex Skipper, but I didn't know about you.
How did you know about Rex Skipper? I haven't talked to Rex in, well, since the late 80s. How did you know about all of these people?
I used to, in my former life, I used to be into this kind of stuff. And so, I always said that Windows was DOS trying to be Mac badly. But in any event, I kept up with this to some degree. And
cool.
So I don't know where Skipper is now. Do you?
No, he left really early on. Then there was Chuck Opperman who was there for a while.
Right, yeah.
And last I heard, Chuck was in Florida working for the people who do malware bites.
Oh, okay. Well, that's a worthy thing. Good
yeah, it was better. It was better before they became quite so commercial.
Yeah, right. Ain't it the truth for everything? So,
the Jack Gale thing can be really short.
Oh.
I love the medicine. You know the medicine, I assume.
Yeah.
As opposed to Madison Time.
Right, right. Absolutely. That's Jack Gale and the Medicine Men actually doing that.
Yeah.
The flip side is sloppy Madison.
Yes.
Yes. Yes.
Yes. I thought it was pretty funny.
Oh yeah. No. I love Jack.
Take a salvapatica.
Yeah. He was just wonderful, and I miss him. So I still have. He did some commercials for me in Globe. I still run some of them. So
wow.
Yeah. I'm trying to think if this is. Oh, the medicine is not on this computer. Darn it. All right. Well, it's probably online though. I can probably find it. So
I could send it.
Oh,
you
could
probably have it.
No, I probably do because it came out on Columbia, I think, somewhere. So I probably got it. I'll look for it, and I'm we'll play the flip side because Sloppy Madison was the A side, of course.
I can tell for a very strange reason that some of our musical collections came from the same place.
Oh yeah.
Because the copy of Lonesome 77203 Hawkshaw Hawkins is missing from that Whitburn collection is missing the intro.
Oh, I know. And you know, the thing that bothers me most about this is, and I'm very grateful for it, but a lot of them, as you know, are CD remixes. And if I don't listen beforehand, I hit them cold. I'm like, oh, my God. You know? Yeah, it's like, that's not the original 45. So, but
you know, it's funny. When I first started hearing some of this stuff in stereo, I was so excited about it.
Oh,
and then as the years have progressed, I've realized that those, quote, stereo, you know, two or three track mixes that had gotten sort of expanded were not the best.
Not
the best tracks.
No, very, very often they'd also take an original track, and as long as they had the raw data, they'd remix the reference tracks, and it would not be anything that a producer would have ever had in mind.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I want the original 45 and nothing else.
Okay.
Yeah. Oh, this is so neat to hear from you. So you've been in Madison now over 20 years, right?
Maybe another thing that
maybe over 30.
Yeah. No, since 2001. So do you remember how we met?
I'm trying to think. I remember the last time I saw you because it was at the 25th anniversary of KHJ.
No. No? That was the first time I saw you.
No. Was it?
Yeah, that was 1990. You were at KOA.
Yes.
We got seated next to each other
at
dinner.
Yes, that's right. Yes.
Just remember.
Yeah.
You trusted me. You told me interesting things.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure. Yeah, and I had a lot of them. Very interesting. And, hard to believe how many people are gone now from that. And the one I miss the most, incidentally, is not the one I would have expected to miss the most, and I miss Steel.
I knew that would be the answer.
It's so weird because it didn't even hit me till later what a gem he really was, and in some ways he was so jaded, and in other ways he was such an innocent, and so I loved that he loved words.
Yeah, I had not realized that until later. My favorite thing about Steel is in that Steel montage that was on Real Radio, where they, for April Fool's Day, took, I think, Lucille by Little Richard and just lengthened the intro.
Oh, have not heard
and
that.
And he just kept trying to talk up to the vocal, and the vocal didn't come in.
I can see that. That's hilarious.
Yes. But we had KMPC in common, because
yes.
I was doing a talk show and then you were on afterwards.
Yes, absolutely.
And that's actually when we spent
right.
more time together, had lunch occasionally.
John says, I must go now. Hang on, don't go away. Stay where you are. I'll go now and I'll be back on WGN Radio. Fun than what's been going on off the air. You know, between trying to schedule deliveries and, oh my God, that's a soap opera and a half. John had an appointment later tonight that was scheduled months in advance, and, they want to know why isn't he there. Well, he's not there because he wasn't scheduled to be there now. So now I'm getting phone messages. Oh, God. And meanwhile, I'll just ignore that and talk with you. But the good news is we're talking to Glenn, which is good news in and of itself, but I found the clip, and apparently the April Fool's joke occurred on April 1st, 1997, so I was already long out of any picture, and of course, sadly, it was less than a year before Don would leave us. But the setup again is that he was thought he was going to talk up Lucille, which was a 14-second intro, but it was looped, and he prided himself on being able to talk up, hit the post, talk up to the vocal. It was looped, and he didn't realize it, and here's what happened.
Good afternoon to you and yours. How do you do? It's April 1st! April Fool's Day. I won't go any deeper than that, other than to say I've got crisp $1,000 bills that I want to give away to each and every one of you if time permits. Till then, Mr. Little Richard, Lucille here on K-Yurt 101 Badu Boop. You're not born when you're that soul, it's over, you know? Richard!
Oh, jeez.
Oh. I can talk market share. You know, New York is marginal. Bye! That's it!
Now, I gotta tell you, are you still with us, Glenn?
I am, in fact.
What is so funny about that to me is when he said, I can talk market share, because this was a problem that I learned early on I had with this man, is don't talk to him before the show, because whatever you're saying will wind up on the air. And I remembered one day he was asking about the ratings, and I was painstakingly explaining every facet of it. And he got on the air and talked about, you know, I'm talking to you and your exclusive cue. I thought, oh God, God help me. So yeah, he was, I can just imagine who had talked to him earlier that day where market share came up.
Yeah, I'm curious about him because he showed personality, but he didn't show the same kind of depth of personality as some people did on the air. Did he show more of a depth of personality just talking off the air as a person?
Oh, absolutely. I thought he was a complete person, not a caricature. In fact, he had more depth than a lot of people, and could sometimes see into a situation so clearly. But again, the weird part was that the other side of that was he had this childlike innocence to things as well, you know. So it was an interesting combination. And as I say, I regret that I didn't spend more time with him, because, you know, on the surface, he was a crazy man. But beneath that, he really wasn't. And, I just really appreciated what he was.
Yeah. The records that he released, Cecil the Unwanted French Fry, and then the second one, too. Pretty weird.
Well, I don't think he took any of that seriously.
No, of course. How could one?
But he took the show deadly seriously. He was the absolute opposite of me in every way, because, you know, basically I come into work, sit down and, you know, talk to people or whatever. You know, I don't take any of it seriously. I mean, formatics be damned. I don't even understand them. And so, or try to. But he would sit there, and the reason that bit of, you know, let's extend the intro, he prided himself on hitting the post every time. And he would, in his mind, you know, conceive exactly how it was going to go, and he'd execute it perfectly. And it was like it was brain surgery. It mattered to him. And he always pulled it off. But it was much more about sound than content. His energy mm-hmm. level was second to none.
Yeah.
You know, and he was a haunted person personally, but it didn't matter. It didn't come out on the air.
Yeah, no, he definitely just, yeah, he was the ultimate showman.
Yeah, yeah, and he lived for it and loved it. You know, he went to Hollywood High, graduated in 1954, and his mother had been a stripper. And this is 1954, so in Hollywood. You can imagine the ribbing he took from other kids.
Yes.
So it was an interesting start, you know. Then he went and got his first phone, and, you know, wound up in Omaha and working for Don Burden before he went to Portland, of course, still working for Don Burden. So interesting. So we used to laugh about Council Bluffs a lot.
Having never been there.
Don't go.
I can't share any Omaha.
Well,
story.
It was
only Omaha I know was Stan Freeberg's Omaha.
Omaha's pretty substantial, thing. Actually. Omaha is. But the Hotline Honeys, if you'd answer the phone and they were from across the straight state, you know, you knew basically hang up.
Yes. So we met because Barbara Barry introduced us, and I thought of her. You mentioned her. I think it was her. You said something about your friend Barbara not giving in to the.
Oh, actually, that wasn't Barbara Barry. No, that was Barbara. Oh. That was Barbara Harvey. But Mikey Harvey's wife. But anyway, last I heard of Barbara Barry, she was on Long Island and she owned a non-com out by Sag Harbor. And
I had not read the non-com part. I had found her online once I realized her last name was Barri.
It was Scerbo. Yeah.
I actually was gonna say that, John. I want to talk about Barbara Scerbo.
Yeah, Scerbo. Yeah, exactly. Well, no, but Barbara Barry. I think she named herself after one of the Barry songwriters. But anyhow, So have you been back in touch with her?
Oh, no, okay. I have not. I thought about reaching out to her. I only knew her really briefly, and I won't go through the weird series of things that caused us to meet, but she realized early on that I was this 25-year-old kid who loved radio, and she said, I have to introduce you to Raleigh Bornstein.
Yeah.
And she brokered lunch, and you were willing to have lunch, and that's when we met back in '83, I think.
Okay. Yeah. No. Barbara was terrific. Michael O'Shea hired her, and then he had walked out the door. Next thing I know, I'm program director of Radio Poland, KPOL, and Barbara was working there at the time part time. But of course, ultimately, they put her on full time on the FM that went country with KZLA, and she did that for years. I mean, literally years, and like 15 years. And she had been at Lee in Richmond and LOF in Orlando and CKS in Cocoa before that. So she had done some stuff done some, MCing and done some voiceover stuff and all that. But she still has a website, and it's just BarbaraBarry.com.
I thought it was BarbaraBarryVO.com or something.
Oh, just BarbaraBarry.com.
I don't think that's her.
Oh, yes, it's her.
Oh, that's her?
Oh, it's her.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. So, but like I say, I hadn't heard after, sadly, the station went down in Sag Harbor. She tried to hold on to it, and I don't know what was the deal there, but then that's the last I had heard.
I wonder what she was doing with it.
She owned it.
Yeah, but it was a non-com. How do you make money from a non-com?
Well, you do. Hampton Radio, I think they called it. Well, the Hamptons have a lot of money to donate, you would think.
Hell,
you were on KSUN. How did they stay alive? Donations.
Not a whole lot in the day. I think the last time we talked, they were trying to auction off airtime. Not literally.
I love that. Stuff. Oh, God.
Not literally do barter, but rather.
No. I know exactly what you mean. The biggest donor gets an hour.
No.
No?
No, they wanted someone to take over the broadcast day.
The whole day?
Basically, pay us for the frequency.
Okay, so they wanted to LMA it.
Yes.
Did they get someone?
I don't think so. They seem to still have their format that they're simulcasting with KSBR.
Okay. Interesting.
So KSBR is Saddleback College on the same frequency.
Right.
Yeah.
All right. Well, interesting. Yeah. Fascinating.
Can I touch on Lee Emerson?
Okay, sure.
So, as best I can figure, he's the guy who got shot by Barry Sadler. Am I correct? Because you said it was Lee someone else.
Yeah, I didn't know it was Lee Emerson, but maybe it was.
So the real reason I wanted to mention...
I think the deal is, it was a guy I think Emerson was like his middle name. I think it was Lee Bellamy, but I think Emerson was his middle name.
But didn't he like manage Marty Robbins and was like a?
I thought he was. You think Lee Emerson managed Marty Robbins?
I think so, and I'm getting around to the real reason I wanted to mention him, which is that he released a weird record called The Gospel Truth.
Oh, God. Yeah, okay.
Do you know this song?
Yeah, I absolutely have heard of the song. Yes, absolutely.
But, I mean, he basically just said how terrible all the country performers were.
Yeah, yep.
Why would someone release that, and who would buy it?
Well, I don't know that anybody bought it, but that's a good question. Who would release it?
Yeah.
So, yeah. But, you know, I mean, vanity labels exist all over the place.
Good point.
So it's easy to do that. And I think that Shelby Singleton released it, though, on Plantation. And if you knew Shelby, I could see Shelby doing that. That was like 76 or something.
In there.
And that was definitely Shelby Singleton. But I think Huey Moe produced it. Doesn't that fit? But I don't know whether he's Lee Emerson Bellamy or not.
Because, I mean, I didn't know it until I went and looked him up. And it tracked back to being shot by Barry Sadler.
Okay, then it must be. Then that's Lee Emerson. I think his first name might have been Emerson Lee Bailey or something like that. But yeah, that would have been the guy. And he would have been dead shortly after that record because he was not young. He was born in the 20s, and I think he did manage a lot of the old timers. Including, if I'm right, Bobby Helms.
Okay.
And then there was a deal where he was married to Roberta Bellamy, and she sang. She wrote Ruby Ann for Marty Robbins, I think, or whatever. But
God,
anyway,
that was a good record.
Yeah, well, she wrote it. So, yeah, Roberta Bellamy, and she was married to him, I'm pretty sure. So that was the deal. Yeah. So he died, you know, assuming, and you're probably right, Barry Sadler shot him. That was December 78.
Okay.
So now, what I got to do is find the Gospel Truth and play it. Normally I wouldn't, but why not?
Do you know what happened to Eddie Stubbs?
No. What?
I don't know. He just sort of disappeared. He was on WSM
right.
in the evenings.
Right.
And then he just, a couple of years ago, said, yeah, I'm retiring.
Right.
Gave his records away and, you know, was pretty quiet about why. And I was curious if you have heard.
No, he was younger. And I know he wound up being one of the two Grand Ole Opry announcers for a while. But he was.
Yeah.
And I think that, I don't know what happened to him. I know he was in the Bluegrass Hall of Fame and all that. But now I don't know. That's interesting. Because it's only been about 4 or 5 years that he walked away from SM, so I don't know. I haven't heard a word either. Oh, now we need to know. Where is Eddie Stubbs? All right.
Okay.
So hopefully somebody will know.
Well, great talking with you.
Yes.
I won't monopolize any more of your time.
No, I'm delighted you called, and I hope you will again. So I just found a Facebook page for Eddie. Of course, the problem is I don't think he's written since 2020. So, oh, man. I'll keep looking.
All right.
All right, thanks. Good to hear from
you. Talking with you.
Yeah, don't wait another 20 years. Okay, bye. So, yeah, that's a lot of fun. So, 888, where is Eddie Stubbs? You know, things I just never think about but probably should. 888-876-5593. We'll get to Michael, a first-time caller from Arlington Heights. Mary Ann's in Chicago. Brian's in Seneca. James is on the south side. And hopefully you'll chime in, too, on WGN Radio.
Nothing can strip your nerves screamingly raw like the diabolical Dr. Z and his doubly diabolical daughter.
Now listen to me. You will kill when I order you to.
See the evil Dr. Z and the diabolical brain machine. Watch him turn humans into demons. Feel a tingling surge of terror as the exotic dance of death unfolds.
It's medicine time. It's time for your medicine, kiddies. Form that big, sick-looking line. Now, when I say hit it, take two steps forward, swallow one Coracetin, drink a glass of Alka-Seltzer, and take two Buffarin. Hit it! That's it. You're looking mighty sick there. Now, when I say hit it, take three steps back, take one teaspoonful of Dr. Pierce's Golden Medical Discovery, followed by one Tums. Hit it! Now make three turns, and when I say hit it, spit out of the doctor's office with a bottle of Father John's cough syrup. Hit it! This is the medicine. Now when I say hit it, take your temperature, a glass of Robo Seltzer, and then swallow three one-a-day brand vitamins. Hit it! Hey, you're looking mighty sick, a great big sick line. Now when I say hit it, spin around on one heel, take a couple of teaspoons of Geritol. Hit it! This is the medicine. Crazy.
WGN Radio, I'm Raleigh James. And yeah, that's Jack Gale, who was a wonderful disc jockey and program director and did so much. But the Madison, of course, actually was a dance that started in, of all places, Columbus, Ohio. You don't normally think of Columbus as being associated with anything like this, but it was in 1957. And Al Brown's Toon Toppers did the first version.
Hey, everybody. Gather round, it's Madison time.
Give me a big strong line. Make it look real fine.
Yeah, actually, I don't know if Al Brown was first, but Ray Bryant was the hit. And if you saw the movie... Hairspray, you'll recognize it. And it's Eddie Morrison who does the calls.
It's Madison time. Hit it. You're looking good, a big strong line. When I say hit it, I want you to go two up and two back with a big strong turn and back to the Madison. Hit the top. You're looking good. Now when I say hit it, I want you to go two up and two back, double cross, come out of it with the rifleman.
Yes, that's the one everybody remembers, and that's the one that Jack Gale is parodying. So I'm glad that that Glenn brought that to mind. Hadn't thought about it in years. The Madison and Sloppy Madison's on the other side. Maybe sometime we'll play that, yeah, or not. Michael in Arlington Heights, a first-time caller. Welcome to WGN Radio.
Thank you. It is good to be on the air with you. And I just want to say that your show is awesome. I listen to it every night, and I am a first-time caller.
Well, I'm delighted to have you. So what's on your mind?
Well, I just wanted to let you know that you have really lifted my spirits because I'm going through a cancer treatment at the moment. I've been going through it since January of this year. I also had my right arm amputated as well.
Oh, no. Was that related?
No. Different scenario.
Oh.
But the good news is the cancer has gone down 50%.
Yay.
And it's getting better. And we're still going through treatments. And there is no side effects of the treatments, which
Yay.
I'm very happy about.
Yes.
And so I just want to let you know that you uplift me through this whole time of what I'm going through, and I just wanted to say thank you very much.
Oh, it's my honor. I'm just so sorry to hear what you have to go through. Now, how long will the treatment go on, do you think?
We don't know. Hopefully it'll be probably the end, maybe up to October.
Okay.
I'm not sure, but, you know, there's no deadline.
Right.
Because I'm, by profession, I'm a CNA caregiver.
Uh-huh. Well, you know. You know all about this, then. You know everything that's likely to occur and how. Sure.
Exactly. So it's not even, for me, it's not a nerve-wracking situation because I know exactly what they're doing and everything like that.
Right.
So it's just like I encourage my patients, as I do home care visits for the elderly and physically disabled and also Alzheimer's.
Uh-huh.
I also encourage them to carry on and be strong. So now I'm doing the same thing. I'm practicing what I preach and doing the same thing for myself, you know.
Yes.
So we don't know how long it's going to be, but hopefully it'll be all gone by this year.
Oh, good. And it's going in the right direction, and it's just a blessing that you're not having the side effects. And I'm assuming you're not in pain?
No, not at all.
That's wonderful.
No. So I'm very, 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 I'm, do you want to say I'm very happy?
Yeah, no, absolutely. That's truly a blessing, and it's rare. Most people do have side effects and pain.
Right, exactly. And it seems like the chemo and the radiation are the most horrifying than the cancer itself.
Of course it is.
But,
yes, and as you know, they're bringing you to the brink of death because the cancer cells are fast growing, and the idea is to kill them and not the rest of you.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So it is. It's, you know, one day, well, after we're long gone, they'll be seeing this as the dark ages. But it's all it's all we got right now.
That's right. That's right. You got it.
So. Yeah. Well, I'm so sorry you're having to go through it, but I'm so glad you're listening, and I hope you're going to call me more often.
Absolutely. Not a problem.
All right, Michael, thanks for checking in.
You're welcome.
All right. So
keep up the good work.
Thanks. Good to meet Michael in Arlington Heights. Yeah, that's a lot to face, that's for sure. Yeah, sometimes when I'm going through this or that or, you know, another snafu, my days are usually filled with a dozen of them. Several times a day sit back and say, well, I'm not battling anything fatal or painful, and I'm all here, and John is all here, so we're not going to sweat the rest of the stuff. Yeah, I have to kick back and remember that several times a day as I'm, meanwhile, you know, going to control or alternate delete faster than you can imagine. All right, so we will get to Brian, and we've got Dave and Marianne, and there's one line available for you, Robert and James, too, on WGN Radio.
Feel that you can make it all alone. Remember, no one is big enough to go it alone. Just ask the lonely, they know the hurt and pain of losing a love. The young and foolish laugh at love, slowly run away. Confident and sure that fate will bring another love their way. But ask the lonely how vainly a heart can yearn for a losing love.
WGN Radio. I one, and there were none. Yes, sadly, with the passing of Duke Fakir, there are no more original Four Tops. And I was saying last night, probably the longest-running group without any member changes, 44 years. And they've been performing regularly, and we'll continue to with replacements, but hearing about Duke. And it was interesting because he had retired from singing literally just 2 days before it was announced that he had died. And I don't think the two were related, actually, but I haven't really looked into that. Ask the Lonely was my all-time favorite Four Tops record. Yeah, 1965, the beginning of 65, and that was done at Studio A in on Hitsville, USA, in Detroit. And Mickey Stevenson and Holland Dozier Holland, of course, are behind that. Just a great, great song. We'll talk more about the Four Tops, I'm sure, but I want to get most of your phone calls in. So we have Brian in Seneca. Welcome back to WGN Radio.
Greetings, Raleigh, from the fire southwest suburbs of Chicago. How are you doing?
All right. How about yourself?
I'm doing okay. First off, for your previous caller, for what much or little are worth, my prayers go out to him and to all the other listeners who are going through health problems. That they recover as best as they're able to at their ages and that. And also a commiseration with Southside James that Ricketts and Reinsdorf are leading the flight away from quality and towards the bottom of Major League Baseball.
Ooh. Ooh.
Okay. Yeah, I can smell the Cubs record from here in Seneca, and you could probably smell them out there in Miami, Arizona.
Okay. All right, then. Yeah. So that's interesting. I know Ricketts, I've read a lot of things. Tom Ricketts is not well-liked. I don't know what the deal is on that.
Well, he's a right-wing baseball team owner in a left-wing town, and you know that sometimes the two wings don't really get together all that.
Well, ain't that there the truth. Okay, so now if we're talking politics, I got
it
entirely.
They're not trying to lynch him because he actually did win the first Cubs World Series in over a century.
Right.
So that allows him to be considered part of humanity.
Okay. Well, we'll just have to accept that for what it's worth.
The two of us together will have to accept that against the rest of your listenership, actually.
All right. Well, at least the Cubs are doing well. We can dwell on that.
Well, they're doing well as in a well, because then they might, maybe, if they really work hard at it, make 500 before the end of the season.
All right.
I'm not holding my breath.
Well, we will see.
And the Sox aren't even that good.
Yeah. All right. So.
But I'd actually called more to do with the drummers, but even before that, you mentioned Radio Formatics. With one of your earlier callers who was a co-worker at one point in
time. Yeah, Glenn. Absolutely, Glenn.
Yeah, and I'm an outsider, but I'm an outsider who always liked listening in.
Uh-huh.
And have you ever heard of WVWA in Poundstone, New York?
Oh, of course.
And their infamous case study in the perfection of radio formatics.
Yeah, and nine, yeah. Okay.
Nine.
See, I know. Yeah, nine. Right. Right. Yeah, that's been a while.
Yeah,
that was out of the 70s.
When I was a relatively young kid, which means that you were already a...
I was working.
Established.
Yeah, right.
Lady.
Yeah.
I had an old, year short of post-war, Philco radio, and that thing, the Sea Crane products probably have more pull than that Philco does, but nothing else came close.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you.
WIND at night from almost 80 miles away from their transmitter.
No, that's a worthwhile competitor, but that it may be a little earlier, but that Zenith Royal series, like the Royal 275, 265, 285, those were tremendous AMDXing radios, little portables.
Oh, absolutely. If I had the money for them when I was 11 or 12 years
old. Okay, all right. Yeah.
you know, them and E.H. Scott's and, oh, those beautiful things to where you turn on one of those radios and it draws more than most houses unless you're charging
right.
your car.
Right, right, exactly. Yeah. So, yeah, WVWA was hilarious as far as all the bits. So, of course. And there's fortunately there's a lot of stuff online as far as that goes. So you can read all about it.
Yeah, and I was lucky enough to find some of that because the straggler from Monday trivia.
Uh-huh.
With Digital Radio sending out the Digital Computer Corporation.
Right,
sending
deck,
out
yeah.
the first spam email.
Yes.
That was kind of funny because I've retired from the service. And at the point in time where digital was still relatively relevant on the sub-closet server market, I left the Marine Corps as a server administrator over a network where the hardware side was running DEC 486s.
Mm-hmm.
And I went into the National Guard, and after a little over 2 years, I got recalled to active duty with the National Guard, and I managed to screen some stuff out of Dermo to get the particular unit I was assigned to up to something until all of our regular appropriated equipment showed up. And that included the exact same class of hardware. Of course, when I left, the Digitals were running a product called Banyan Vines, which probably only the two of us and three of your listeners know what it is.
Yeah.
And the other the stuff that I'd wiped out and got kind of sort of behaving itself, I loaded up with Windows NT, which...
Oh, God.
For the people beyond the two of us and the three other listeners who go back that far, Windows NT is the Windows you've got on your table today, with all the stupid consumer limits cut off and made into a business operating system.
Yeah, I'm just upset that Windows ever existed. Like I always say, Windows was DOS trying to be Mac. And
The NT side of Windows was a completely different animal.
Yes, it was. I'll give it that. It was. And, of course,
and
what's come since then is a disaster.
I'd stayed with OS2 if IBM would have stayed with OS2, but they
right.
left, so I left.
Right. Oh, yeah. No, I mean, there was really no choice. And Banyan Vines, I think, was Unix. So
It was Unix to the same degree that Novell NetWare was DOS.
Okay.
And I also ran some Novell boxes over the years, you know, so I could, you know, I could see it. Now, the biggest thing was in the early days when desktop and closet server class CPUs only had one core inside each of them.
Right.
Vines could actually use two CPUs if the motherboard had them and had them wired in right, where I don't think that Novell ever did.
Right.
But, well, that's also going off into a rabbit hole, because the other original thing that had me calling in was to make a comment or two about major rock and roll and rockabilly and country drummers.
Okay.
And that's kind of funny because at the top of the show you brought up Ricky Nelson.
Indeed,
and
I did.
Ozzie Nelson was originally a big band orchestra leader.
Oh, of course. That's how Ricky got the contracts.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Well, yeah, he was good
hang on
at
a minute.
It, but he was...
Hang on a minute. Don't go away. We got another hour of this. Stay right where you are because I don't want to blow the news because I know I'm coming dangerously close to that. But if you're calling and it's busy, just wait for somebody to hang up and then it'll be your turn to get in because we have another hour of this right here on WGN Radio.
Let me tell you about an Ahab, the Arab, the sheik of the burning sand. He had emeralds and rubies dripping over him and finger of his hand. He wore a big old turban wrapped around his head and a centipede by his side. And every evening about midnight, he jumped on his camel named Clyde to ride southward through the night to the Sultan's tent, where he would secretly meet up with me, Fatima of the Seven Veils, the swingin'est number one dancer in Sultan's whole harem. 'Cause like him and me, we had a thing going, you know. We'd been carrying on for some time now behind the Sultan's back, and you could hear him talk to his camel as he rode out across the dunes. His voice would cut through the still night desert air, and he'd say, which is Arabic for whoa, baby. And Clyde would say, ma, ma, ma. Well, he brought his camel to a screeching halt at the head of Fatima's tent. Jumped off Clyde, snuck around the corner, and into the tent he went. There he saw me lying, lying on the zebra skin rug. And bells on my toes and a bone in my nose, ho ho. There I was, friends and neighbors, lying there in all my radiant beauty, eating on a raisin and a grape and an apricot and a pomegranate, a bowl of chitterlings, two bananas and three Hershey bars, and sipping on an ROC Coca-Cola and listening to my transistor and watching the Grand Ole Opry and reading Mad Magazine while I sang Does Your Chewing Gum Lose Its Flavor?
WGN Radio, I'm Raleigh James. Well, there she is, Joanne Campbell, clearly a good sport. Cameo Parkway ruined her. And that is on the All the Hits by Joanne Campbell from 1962 Cameo Parkway album. And she destroys everything from I'm the Girl from Wolverton Mountain to Keeps Right On a Hurtin' and Teenage Idol and Devil Woman. And, of course, Ahab the Arab and many more. Yeah, Send Me the Pillow You Dream of, I Remember You. Yeah, all that. So, yeah. But Graham, who we'll get to in a moment, that was one of the two things I promised I'd play for Graham. All right, so we will get there. But we're talking to Brian and Seneca. Are you still with me, Brian?
Yes, I am. How are you doing tonight?
All right. So, drummers. You wanted to talk about drummers.
Yeah, we'll go ahead and get back on to them. The two drummers that I was admiring quite a bit that don't seem to quite make anybody's list are Ringo Starr and Graham Edge.
All right.
Ringo Starr is the bigger one, of course. And the biggest thing about Ringo Starr, other than he was better than Best, was that the guy was a human metronome. He never changed the speed of his playing accidentally. If he slowed down or sped up, it was because he wanted to or because he was told to. Otherwise, if you told him to play X beats per minute, that's what you got. No more, no less, no fading, no ups, no extras. And that is not near as easy as you would think it would be.
Oh, absolutely. There are others who can claim that fame as well. But I can't really comment on either of your choices because it's not neither are forms of music that I particularly want to hear. But I'll certainly respect your choices.
Certainly. In the case of Edge, I wouldn't say that he was brilliant per se, but... he was good, and he never ran out of energy.
So what's your all-time favorite drum solo?
The one that comes closest to mind, believe it or not, is Edge's leading into the long-form version of the Moody Blues, I'm Just a Singer in a Rock and Roll Band.
Okay.
Now, Gene Krupa could absolutely beat the drums. Buddy Rich... You know, if you can say drums without saying Buddy Rich, there's something wrong with you.
All right. Good enough. Yeah, and that's fine.
And,
all respected.
Keith, Keith Moon is definitely there. John Bonham's there. And since I don't have his name right in front of me, I'm forgetting the name of the drummer from Rush, who was inspired by Keith Moon and actually eclipsed him. And I think he's still around since he lived a healthier lifestyle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I guess John Rutsey was one of them with Rush, and Neil Peart was the other, but he's no longer with us.
Okay, if Neil, it was Neil I was thinking of.
Yeah, he's been gone since 2018.
I believe he passed more of age and illness instead of drowning in his own alcohol returns or the way that Moon passed on.
Okay. Yeah. Well, it'd be hard to top that all the way around. Yeah, I've got some favorites, but I have a question. And actually, every line is busy, so probably not a good time to ask it, but I will. As far as not solos, just my all-time favorite record because of the drum line, it's Hey Little Girl by Dee Clark. I don't think anything comes close. And I don't, it was on Abner in 1959. I don't know who played drums on it.
And I certainly wouldn't know it either.
Do you know the song?
You're definitely not old enough to be my mother, but you're more than old enough to be my aunt.
There you go. There you go. But yeah, do you remember the song?
No. Right. And I'll let you
hear.
Request.
Yeah, I'll let you hear a little of it, so you'll see where we're on a very different page. Yeah, so I just love that.
Yeah, we're not on a different page at all because he's doing what the drummer's supposed to do.
Well, of course. It's a double backbeat. That's why I was a sucker. And, of course, as far as drum solos, I'll always go with Holy Ghost. Nothing is better than Holy Ghost to me, but there's a lot more involved. Now, do you remember that?
That's another one where if I've heard it, it blended into the background.
Well,
so we are just...
And it goes on from there for another minute.
And they say the guitar fans have trouble picking out their favorite.
Yeah, well, there you have it. All right, good to talk to you, Brian.
Now, as a request,
what? Yes,
I would like you to, if you can fit it in, play the long version of I'm Just a Singer, it's a Rock and Roll Band for one of the bumpers tonight.
Well, you know, when you say long version, I can only play 90 seconds of anything. Cause that's
well, this would be the first 90 seconds because it starts out with Edge drumming the rest of the band.
All right.
Into playing the song. And, of course, the song goes on for something like 7 or 8 minutes, and he plays every second of it.
All right. Well, it'll be tomorrow night, but I promise you I've added it to the list, and you will hear it tomorrow night.
And I'll be there.
Okay, thanks. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right, it's a good deal. 888-876-5593, 8888. Raleigh Dave is in Forest City, Iowa. Hello, Dave.
Hey, Raleigh. I'll try to focus my attention on the subject, and I wanted to talk about, you mentioned bad audio change in radio stations, and I know two stations around here, for years they've had bad audio, and I wanted to do some telephone consulting, and I wanted to know, how can I talk these general managers into letting me do some telephone consulting to get those audio chains sounding good again?
Well, here's the first thing. Who are the stations owned by?
Oh, probably, iHeart.
Well, that's what you need to find out first, because what I'm saying is it may not be the general manager's purview. You need to find out who would be in charge first.
The problem is they have one engineer who takes care of
a state.
10 radio stations.
No, a state. In many cases.
No.
yes, in many cases.
That's terrible.
Yeah, so, you know, that's the problem, and, I think it's almost hopeless. Are these AM stations?
Yeah.
Then nobody's going to care.
So there's no money.
There nobody's
no
going to care.
No money in it, right?
No one's going to care.
Okay.
And in addition to the audio chain, the ground system probably went to hell.
Okay.
I wish I could give you better information. Now, if you had an independent owner who just cared about his radio station, that's a different deal. But of course, if you had that, it probably wouldn't sound very bad.
Yeah. So the days of five engineers at a little station are gone.
Oh, yes, of course. Of course. No, well, you mentioned iHeart. The famous story was they had five stations off the air in Savannah because they had to fly somebody in, and it took several days.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And with AMs, you know, there again, what programming is on these stations?
Talk.
All right. Mostly. So most of it's probably satellite delivered, not local.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And so a lot of these engineers don't even know that you might want to leave an oscilloscope hooked up to the output of the console.
Well, the problem. I hate to say it, but the problem today is finding engineers who even understand that concept. It's really hard to find RF engineers or audio engineers. You find a lot of IT people who are named chief engineer now. So you've got a lot of problems with this. And this is a problem in our industry because there aren't that many, especially with AM, there aren't that many people coming up who even grasp the concept.
Well, I've built amplifiers. I've designed audio amplifiers. So I'm that kind of a guy. I'm not much of a computer guy. So.
Yeah, well, no, that's wonderful.
That's my problem.
It's wonderful, but unfortunately, there are very few of you at any radio stations. You know, if you were in a position to apply for a job as an engineer, I'd say go for it. You know, but I don't know if you're if you're thinking about that. Consulting is a whole different ballgame. But there are a few people who do it.
Yeah. Well, I think people in general are just... don't like to pay for consulting.
Well, it's partially that. And, you know, again, depending on the owner and all that, it's not that they're cheap, it's that they're truly desperate. You know, it used to be that people were greedy. Now they're in fear for losing the entire company overnight because of the debt service. So in some cases, the dollars just are not there. And you start to analyze where you can spend the money. And unfortunately, things like AM pretty much go out the window. Especially if it's, you know, like a little class 4, a class C, that's not going to be anything that anybody's going to want to really keep up.
Yeah. So this iHeart is going to, well, they look like they're in pretty bad shape financially.
Well, you know, that's not only true for them, that's equally true for Odyssey and Cumulus. But, you know, the issue, one of the reasons that keeps them alive is, you know, debt service isn't like going to the bank and borrowing the money. Obviously, it occurs in multi-layers, and the bulk of it are subordinated debentures, or like you would want to call them, junk bonds. Well, the reality is those people are so far down on the totem pole that if someone declares bankruptcy, or if they try to declare bankruptcy on someone for loss of payment, they'll just get nothing. So they're more amenable to working out plans. And you see this periodically. Well, we've reshuffled our debt. We've done this. Or, you know, we filed an 11 and we're reorganizing and we're giving people more equity, on and on. You can talk all night long about how it happens. But again, very few people who are probably in a real good position to say foreclose on these companies don't want to do it because they wouldn't get a dime and there's no one standing in line to take on that level of debt.
Yeah, so they just lend them more money?
They don't lend them more money. It's a question of not getting paid on the bonds and things like that and having some of it turn into equity. It's not necessarily that they're giving them more, but they're not pressuring them on what they should be receiving in many cases. They offer, you know, this deal or that deal. But again, keep in mind that the subordinated guy probably would wind up losing everything unless something creative happened because the debt service is such that, and I've said this many times, a station can be fully sold out at top dollar and still not repay all that debt. So it's just mathematical. It's arithmetic that it cannot work. But again, there's no one standing in line to take on the debt. So we'll see where it goes. But, Clear Channel / iHeart is perennially a disaster for a lot of reasons. But believe me, look at Odyssey. Oh, man. And of course, Cumulus is another one that's chronic. So, I don't have a magic wand in terms of how that's going to happen. But right now, I don't see anybody who's ready to pull the plug because they just lose.
Yeah. I wanted to ask you about Jordan Peterson and his remarks was he has a YouTube video called The Curse of Creativity. And he was telling how it's hard for creative people to make money. And so what he says is you just do something like mow lawns like I do and then just do the creative thing. Or
yeah, and I know that, but here's the deal. You know, and all these people who we talk about as being the pioneers and stuff like that, the Gordon McLennans or the Todd Storrs, when we're talking Top 40 radio, the reality is there was nothing to lose because the stations were virtually worthless. Back when they were buying them early on, television had come on, that's radio with pictures. The stations are worth $25,000, maybe. Well, you can take a chance.
Really?
So, yeah, that's what they paid for WTIX in New Orleans, what Todd did. Anyway, the deal is that when something is not worth anything, people are willing to take a chance because there's no risk. And so from that standpoint, if you're looking at the creative end of it, the best thing that could happen is for the industry to collapse where things were suddenly virtually worthless because now people take a shot. But as long as you're defending something that has value, no, creativity goes out the window. They don't care. But they'll take a shot on nothing. But for creativity, you know, granted, it defies the law of supply and demand, the internet, that is. Nobody has ever searched for something they've never heard of, so it's hard to do something on the internet as a primary venture. But at the same time, you've got the total freedom to do it. So I would strongly suggest, and it's free for the most part, I would suggest anybody who has a lot of creative jones and they want to find a way to materialize it, do something online. And, you know, if it's really...
I do. I upload stuff to YouTube.
Well, and that's great.
It's not.
but they don't know who you are, so they don't know to search for it. That's why it's always good if there's a brick-and-mortar connection. You know, like when they talk about the big podcasts, invariably you scratch the surface and, he was doing mornings in L.A. for 40 years. Or, that's PBS. Or, on and on. So there's usually a connection that way. But at the same time, if you're doing something that's really worthwhile, then the next thing is to find a way to promote it. And maybe you promote it on other websites that are getting more foot traffic.
Yeah, and a lot of these, I think, writers make good YouTubers because I know the one, Vanessa Blank, is a good YouTuber, and she's also a writer. She wrote a book, and she writes books about bushcraft from Germany. She lives in Germany, and so I listen to Vanessa Blank. She speaks German. I'm learning German from her.
Okay.
Mostly, and music.
All right.
But she is... She's a very creative person, and she's insanely productive. She has so much on there that apparently she does this all by herself.
You know, it also also sounds like you mentioned she was a writer. She has things published or things that aren't online. So that's her touchstone to get people to know she's there. And that's the key.
I'm not so sure that the books, I would say the online stuff, directs people to her books rather than the other way around.
Well, I don't doubt it.
She was on YouTube.
But somebody knew to search for her is my point. They didn't search for her they had to have heard of her somewhere, and that's the key. If anybody can ever figure out an algorithm where you can search for things you don't know exist, I'd love to hear it.
So one way is to put swimming suit pictures of you on the internet.
Right. Cats work too, but all right. So, I'll talk to you later. We've devolved to this. All right. Thanks. Appreciate
it. We'll see ya.
All right. So, yes, nude pictures and cats. So that's where we'll pick it up. We won't talk about any of that. We will play Graham's other request that I said I would play, Chicken Spacemans, because he hasn't heard it. Yes, The Tides. And hopefully your call is coming up on WGN Radio.
I was walking down the street just minding my business when the man walked up and said, Uncle Sam, I need you, my boy, to be the next man out of space. I said, do you mean me? He said, I mean you. I says, you must be out of your mind. He said, we looked and we searched all over this land, but not a better man could we find. I said, I think you made a bad mistake, 'cause I'm chicken all over the place. But they packed me up and shipped me out to a secret rocket base. I says, I wanna go home. He says, sit right down or everything's gonna be alright. Your rocket ship about 7 a.m. and you'll be home in time for dinner tonight. Then came the morning of the great countdown. The president and general were standing all around. They put me in the rocket ship and strapped me to the seat. They gave me 2 cans of Metrogel and a Hershey bar to eat. The next thing I remember, I was floating in space. I was surrounded by gadgets and dials. I don't recollect how long I've been up here, but it seems like quite a little while. I said, hello, Earth.
Hello, buddy.
There's a voice at the end of the line. It seems like our boys have made a little mistake. You can't get home till 1999. What'd you say?
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James. And that's the Tides.
I just knew this was gonna happen. How am I gonna get my mail?
All right. Yes, the Tides. Yeah, I don't really appreciate it either. I'm sure Dory, 1961. And the Olympics had a version of that out also, but I always thought the Tides just nailed it. And I thought that Grand, who is now in Graham Junction, might enjoy it. So there you have both your requests.
Yes. Yeah, I'm already pulled through Grand Rapids. I went inside and had dinner at Denny's, and now I'm going to go a few more miles down the road.
All right. All right.
Yeah. So thank you for playing those for me. I do appreciate it.
Oh, sure. So what did you think of Chicken Spaceman?
Chicken Spaceman's really good. Yeah. Now, I got a question. Why are you only able to play a few minutes
well,
of each song?
I can only play, an establishing amount of time because of music rights. In other words, talk stations pay a different rate for music rights. Now, on shows where they're playing whole music, such as Wolfman Jack, which they care now, or when they were doing Sinatra or whatever, they have to list exactly what the songs are, and then they pay per cut. But as far as intros to talk segments, yeah, you can play a little music, but you can't play the whole records.
I got it. Okay, that makes a certain amount of sense.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, because I remember you were doing that, but I couldn't quite remember why.
That's the deal.
Okay. And you were speaking about drummers before, and my favorite drummer is definitely Keith Moon.
Is who?
I was watching a video in a bar in Las Vegas yesterday, and sure enough, he had his, I don't know if it was a concert or what it was, but he actually had his headset taped onto his head so it wouldn't fly off while he was playing.
Who is this?
Keith Moon from The Who.
Oh, okay, yeah, right, okay, sure. Well known, that's for darn sure, yeah.
Yes, because he was basically bananas. And, unfortunately,
he's been gone a real long time. I think
since I was a little kid.
Right, 78, I think. Yes. He was in his early 30s or something. But, uh-huh. With his Better Living Through Chemistry plan, it wasn't surprising.
Uh-huh. Well, unfortunately, I think that once most of the band is gone, they should stop playing as that band, because, you know, you can't just keep sticking new people in all the time.
Well, you know,
because after a while, and
yeah, it doesn't sound the same. For the most part, that's true. I agree. And I really hate it when people buy the name and they never were associated with the group. But there have been a few, very few, like the Duprees are an example. Joey Van died quite a while ago, and his wife, his widow, got the rights to it. And she keeps the Duprees on the road, but her deal is they have to rehearse and sound exactly like those 45s. And they do. But most of them, most of them, it's not way. I remember once a friend of mine in Las Vegas was saying, oh, I'm going to go see the Marvelettes. I said, no, you're not. What do you mean? There are no Marvelettes performing in Las Vegas tonight. Trust me on this. And so he went and he said, all they sang were Martha and the Vandellas songs. I said, because they probably didn't know any Marvelettes songs. But, you know, that was the deal. Motown used to license the names. And there was a group that were, they licensed the Elgin name that did Darlin' Baby and all that, and they'd appear around Philadelphia. And I remember one time John and I were at one of the appearances, and the lead singer steps up and, you know, said, "And in 1968 we had Darlin' Baby," and John looked at me and said, "She wasn't alive in 1968." Which obviously no one up there was. So, yeah, I don't like it when they do that. But if they can sound exactly like the 45s, I'm okay with that.
Okay, well, that makes a certain amount of sense. But I just, like I said, if when the sound's not right and they're, you know, and I've also heard of some bands that they've had more than one band touring at a time in different parts of the country.
And there are lawsuits. You know, there are lawsuits out the yin-yang for that. I can't tell you how many Drifters, for instance, and Platters. And you know, the various states have done some legislation about, you know, truth in music where they have to disclose. But unfortunately, it still, even with all the legislation, still goes on. But yeah, there are some people, maybe they'll get the right to the original Drifters, and then somebody else will get Bill Pinckney's Drifters. And, you know, at least it's differentiated than, I don't know how many Coasters groups there were, certainly more than there were Coasters. So, yeah, it is a problem.
Yeah. Yeah, that's sad when they do that.
Yeah.
And, you know, they wonder why people get mad at them.
Yeah.
Raleigh, it's been great riding along with you again tonight, and I'll be listening. You're playing tomorrow, right?
Oh, yes, tomorrow and Thursday. I hope you'll call and tell me where we are.
I will.
All right,
thanks. I always call you when I'm on the road.
And I appreciate
that. When I'm sitting in the chair, that's when I fall asleep.
Well, of course. No, I appreciate it, and you know I love to ride, so thank you.
Okay, we'll talk to you tomorrow.
Sounds good. Looking forward to it. All right, yes, indeed. So, love to live vicariously through you. Steve Bryant, speaking of Las Vegas, welcome back to WGN.
Thank you, Raleigh. How are you and John doing?
Well, we're here, and I mean, the frustration level is enormous, but like I was saying earlier, is, you know, when I step back and realize that, hey, we're not dying, we're not in pain, what else matters?
Well, that's a very good way to look at it.
Yeah.
That really is. And now at 73, I think that's fine. Always remember that line in The Godfather where Hyman Roth said, you know, I'd give half the money I have if I could just take a leak and not have it hurt.
Oh, exactly. Oh, I know that. That's the truth. I remember that as a kid. I'd see people having long, in-depth conversations about things like bowel movements. You know, and I mean, they would raps about it. You know, like, oh, it was. Mm-hmm. It's like, and I always used to laugh, saying, you know, is that all you got to talk about? But hey, I understand.
Pretty much it.
I understand.
Well, I wanted to chat for a moment about John Mayall. Very sad. I mean,
but 90 years old, it's not too sad, you know, from that standpoint.
That's true.
It's sad for everybody left behind, but for him, 90, that's great.
Yeah. He did terrific. Saw him a couple of years ago in Northern California, in Folsom.
Mm-hmm.
Had his five-piece blues band. Right. And I walked in before the show. I see this guy at the merchandise table, and I went, that's John Mayall.
Wow.
He works his own merchandise table. I thought that was great.
Wow. Yeah,
so,
why not?
You know, that way you're sure you're not getting ripped off and everything. But I came in, it wasn't that crowded. We chatted for a couple of minutes. I talked to him, and I have such admiration for him, and he was such an influence on myself and so many others. You know, he starts off when the Blues Breakers started to kind of make some noise. He had Peter Green as his lead guitarist. And Peter Green went off to Fleetwood Mac, back when Fleetwood Mac was a good band.
Right.
Then he gets Eric Clapton and imparts a lot of wisdom to Eric Clapton. And Eric does acknowledge that.
Yeah.
And then Eric goes off, forms Cream and other things, Derek and the Dominoes and what have you. Then he gets Mick Taylor,
right,
who, for my money, is one of the greatest electric guitarists ever. And Mick Taylor is asked to join the Rolling Stones. You know, let's see, John Mayall, the Rolling Stones. it was a pretty easy, decision to come to. And so he decided to totally change his sound. And in 1969, he got John Mark and John Almond. One was a fingerstyle guitarist. One was a multi-instrumentalist, a wind instrumentalist, what have you. And he went for a softer sound with no blaring electric guitars. And he did the Turning Point album. And I was at the Fillmore East both nights in 69 when they recorded that album. And it, everybody at the Fillmore, when we walked out, we knew we had heard something completely different. I mean, it just changed the game.
Wow.
This soft acoustic, powerful music that just came at you. And that just, with that wonderful song, Room to Move,
mm-hmm.
with that killer harmonica part and what have you. And I think when, so he thought, I think he thought he was set. And then Mark and Almond went and formed their own band, Mark Almond, and had two albums, I think, and some moderate success. They had one hit, I think, called The City. And that was about it. And then they kind of faded into obscurity.
Mm-hmm.
But John kept playing. He just kept doing pickup bands and what have you.
Right, right. And Harvey Mandel for a minute there.
Yes, indeed.
But you know, you're forgetting one, or maybe you just weren't thinking about it either way. But didn't he do something with champion Jack Dupree in the mid-60s?
Yes, for a very short period of time.
Yeah, it was like, I think there was, Clapton was involved in some of it, but it was just like one session or whatever, but it, you know, I was impressed that it was Jack Dupree, you know, so.
Oh, yeah, well, but everybody, I mean, the respect this man had, I mean, he did more to further the blues, I think, than almost anybody I could think of.
Well, yeah, and after that period you're talking about, then he did a lot of stuff in the States, Albert King and stuff like that.
Yep.
So, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he and I always admired his harmonica playing had a big influence on me. I sound a lot like John Mayall if he really wasn't very good.
That's hilarious.
But he didn't. A lot of guys who play the harmonica, a lot of white guys who play the harmonica, try to sound black. Mayall never tried to sound black. He just sounded like Mayall.
Right.
It was a whole different kind of sound that he had,
right.
and really a good, I thought a good sound, and he was quite a technician on the harmonica, so I admired that. But yeah, like you said, 90, that's a heck of a
90s, darn good. And he survived so many different musical periods and so many things. I think his house was one of them in Laurel Canyon that burned down in the 70s and lost a lot of stuff. I mean, and he'd bounce back. So, absolutely. And like I say, I was sad for the music world, but not for him. Great life. We should all have as good a ride.
Exactly. I wanted to share that with you.
Yeah.
Thank you very much. Things are just, I'm sure they're hot where you are. They're very hot. Here it was 111 today.
Oh, lovely. Yeah. Well, you know, you're in the desert.
That's what everybody forgets that we're in the desert. And I love it when somebody who hasn't lived here said, they said it's going to be a wind tonight. I said, do you ever live in a blow dryer?
Yeah, right, exactly.
Here it comes.
Well, and it's interesting because Las Vegas in days gone by, you know, when I was a denizen of the 60s and stuff like that, it would truly cool off at night. But now there's so many homes and so many pools and so many this and that it doesn't.
No.
So, yeah, I know. I know Phoenix did that too. It just doesn't. It's like, what happened to the desert? So, yeah. And meanwhile, of course, you're going to have the, not a complete implosion, but the Mirage closing is on all the news and all that. So.
Oh, yeah.
That's funny.
Oh, yeah.
My Vegas time is so much before that I don't remember the Mirage opening, let alone closing.
Wow.
That's
something. I mean, we're losing a lot of the classic.
Oh, it's all gone.
Yeah.
It's
and I think the movie Casino actually showed the beginnings of that when they were dynamiting. I know I was at that the Rio hotel back in the 90s.
Right.
And I looked out my window at the Rio, and actually Roseanne has even mentioned this to me. You look out your window back in the 90s and the whole parking lot was nothing but RVs.
Uh-huh.
They used to rent out the parking lot
to
RVs.
Did. Absolutely. And the people came because you had the free buffets and all that, of course. But
exactly.
When the Stardust was imploded and everything else, I thought, it's over. goodbye.
Yeah.
I miss this.
Yeah, it's done. It's just done. I got to see Lance Burton.
Okay.
At the Rio, and he's okay.
Yeah.
You know, good for him.
Well, see, you would know.
I don't know what he's doing now.
You're a fellow magician, so you would know. But I don't know what he's doing either. So I'm sure he's got a website, Master Magician or something. So yeah.
Oh, I'm sure he's there. I mean, he was. Did it, and I felt bad because it was the big theater,
mm-hmm.
and maybe there were 25% of the people in the big theater.
Yeah, it's tough.
You know,
yeah, I do.
I gave the maitre d' a tip so I could sit down front,
mm-hmm.
and he looked at me like I was from Venus, and I didn't need the tip. I went down front because that's where the seats were.
Well, right, exactly. But, you know, part of the problem with the Rio, of course, is where it is. It's so far out of Flamingo. So that, of course, now that's the middle of town. But back then, that wasn't.
Well, that's right.
Yeah. Call me soon.
I shall, Raleigh.
All right, thanks.
You much.
Appreciate it. All right, so 888-876-5593 on WGN Radio.
She would love me so, but in time I realized she had a pair of roving eyes. I remember the nights we dated, always acting sophisticated, talking about high society. Oh, then she tried to make a fool out of me. They call her, whoa.
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James. I hope Cindy's still awake because I promised I'd play it tonight before the show was over, and the show is almost over. So hopefully she is still with us. Robert and Stickney, welcome back. You got some requests? No, well, whatever Robert has, he gave up, and who could blame him? You know, we're live 3 hours tomorrow night and Thursday night, so if you didn't make it in tonight, you got two more shots, and I hope you'll try. Marianne in Chicago, you still with us?
Hello.
Hello, Marianne.
Hey, Raleigh, how are you?
All right, how are you doing?
Okay.
Good.
I'll make it quick. I just want to make a request.
Okay.
I know we'll play tonight, but would you mind playing Gladys Knight, If I Were Your Woman?
Okay, sure. I'm writing it down, and I will not forget.
Okay, I'll listen for it.
Thanks, appreciate it.
Bye-bye.
All right, and of course... Carol, the world's best show prep in the world, will remind me in case I do forget. But I have written it down. Now the question is, will I lose the paper? All right, so Sherry in Naperville's got some requests. Welcome back to WGN.
Hi, Raleigh, how are you?
Well, I'm here. How about yourself?
I'm good.
Good.
You played, and it was somebody, you were talking about somebody, Dale or Dale somebody. And it was like a Madison. It was the first song.
Oh, Madison. Ray Bryant combo, the Madison. And then I played the Jack Gale parody, the Medicine.
The Madison.
Yeah, well, the Madison is the record. The parody is the Medicine. Jack Gale.
The Medicine.
Yeah, and it's Jack Gale, G-A-L-E. Probably 1960. Possibly 61.
Look it up. Because it cracked me up. It reminded me of the milkman thing during World War II, where the guy who worked at the building planes or whatever said, milkman, please don't clink your bottles or whatever that was.
Yeah.
That kind of story.
No, I'm pretty sure it was 1960, and he was a great disc jockey, and also he was involved in the music industry and had owned little labels and stuff like that, and so he was terrific, and that's the deal. Of course, the flip side was also a takeoff on the Madison called the Sloppy Madison, but the hit was Ray Bryant Combo, and it's Eddie Morrison doing the calls.
That was the first song?
Well, the Medicine is the takeoff. The hit was Ray Bryant, and in Ray now the dance started in Columbus. And the interesting thing about this is it was done in Columbus for like 3 years, not to any given record. It was a dance that was created in one of the halls there, a dance hall type thing in a club. And then it became big, and because the dance became big, they came up with records for it. And the most popular one was Ray Bryant Combo with Eddie Morrison. And that was
okay. I want to mention two more things really quick.
All right.
My aunt, I took albums from my grandpa's house when everybody moved out. One was Ricky Nelson, and it was all drum solo, no vocals whatsoever. So I'm guessing my Aunt Carol had a big crush on him.
Okay.
And then the other thing is the best drum solo I've ever heard is after, I think the song is called Frankenstein.
Really? Okay. Yeah, Frankenstein, of course. All right.
But it's like way near the middle or the end.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Well, I will look for that and Edgar Winter Group on Epic, and maybe we'll play that too. All right. The show has ended. I'll talk to you soon.
Thank you.
All right. Okay. Apologies to James on the South Side. We will get to his stories if he's kind enough to call tomorrow night, and hopefully you will be as well. Until then, thank you to Brett for keeping us on the air. Could not have done it without him. Thanks to John for screening your calls, but above all, thanks to you for calling. It makes it easier for me to do, and I like easy. I'm Raleigh James. It's WGN Radio.